I want you to think for a second about the last time you locked eyes with someone for just an uncomfortable amount of time.
Oh, yeah. That is never a relaxed experience.
Right. I mean, holding that gaze long past the point of like polite acknowledgement. In the real world, direct eye contact quickly becomes this unbearably intense, intimate thing.
It really does. It only takes a few seconds.
Exactly. The tension builds into this actual physical sensation, and while one of you inevitably has to look away to break the pressure.
Because the social and biological pressure of sustained gaze is massive. I mean, we are evolutionarily wired to process prolonged eye contact in strictly binary terms.
Binary, like friend or foe.
Basically, yeah. You either find it deeply vulnerable and connective, or your brain registers it as a primal threat. There's really no neutral middle ground there.
Huh. You either break the tension with a polite smile and look down, or.
Or you begin to feel cornered by the person staring at you.
And that feeling, that exact feeling of being cornered, is the perfect entry point for today's deep dive.
It really is the core of this whole piece.
We are looking at a painting completed on December 24th, 2019, by the artist Jairo Duque. It is simply titled Ojo, which translates to I.
Just I. So fitting.
Right. And I want you to visualize this with me. Imagine a perfectly square canvas, exactly 11 by 11 inches. So about 28 by 28 centimeters.
Which is pretty small, honestly.
Small canvas, but this isn't a traditional portrait. There is no face, no background context, no supporting details at all.
Nothing to ground it.
Exactly. It is just an eye. And it is blown up to the scale of a human head, aggressively, unblinkingly staring right back at you.
Which creates this immediate spatial confrontation. You are trapped in its gaze.
Because it's an inanimate object on a wall.
Right. It is never going to be the one to look away first. You, the viewer, are forced to deal with the discomfort.
Okay, let's unpack this because there is a massive debate swirling around this 11-inch square of canvas.
Oh, a huge debate.
Our mission today is to explore the intense, almost vibrating tension inside this specific painting. Like, is Ojo a monumental emotional portal directly into human consciousness?
Or, and this is the flip side, is it a purely technical, anatomical experiment that, ultimately gets trapped by its own material constraints?
Right. To get to the bottom of that tension, this deep dive requires us to synthesize three very different sources of information.
Yes, we're going to look at the physical chemistry of the artist's materials, which is fascinating.
Very. Plus Jairo Duque's shockingly honest studio notes.
And finally, the underlying cognitive psychology of how our brains actually perceive and process images.
Because we have to examine the physical scaffolding underneath the illusion to really understand the emotional impact.
Exactly.
So let's start with the physical origin of the piece. It's fascinating because the setting creates this sharp contrast with the subject matter.
Oh, a total contrast.
Yeah.
Duke paints this in his studio in Whittier, California.
And a working art studio is a highly tactile, visceral environment. It is noisy, it's messy.
Right, the air smells of solvents and binders.
Yeah, there is pigment permanently stained into the floorboards. The artist is physically wrestling with the canvas on the easel, applying pressure, testing the friction of the brush strokes.
It is a deeply earthy, three-dimensional space where creations are quite literally pulled into physical reality.
But the reference material he is working from completely contradicts that environment.
Completely. The image Duke is referencing wasn't a live model sitting across from him in that Whittier studio.
Right. He wasn't painting a person breathing the same air.
No, he's painting from an optical photograph pulled straight from the web.
Just a fleeting, highly compressed digital file.
Yeah.
I have to push back on the validity of that method, though. I mean, if the starting point is a digital photo, doesn't that instantly amputate a core human element from the artwork?
Well, that's the big criticism, isn't it?
Right. When an artist paints from life, there is an invisible but very real transfer of three-dimensional information. You have a living human being sitting in the room, constantly shifting.
Their skin reacting to the temperature.
Exactly. Their micro expressions changing. If you take that away and replace it with a frozen screen, isn't the artist just acting as like a human printer decoding cold pixels?
It's a fair question, but if we connect this to the bigger picture, you can actually see the evidence of those cold pixels embedded right in the painting itself.
Wait, really? Embedded how?
It isn't hidden. It's actually central to the piece. If you look closely at the iris of Ojo, right at the top, overlapping the pupil, there is a very distinct bright white reflection.
Oh, the catchlight. Usually that is the most romantic part of a portrait.
In classical portraiture, absolutely. A 17th century painter would use that catchlight to reflect a studio window or, you know, the warm flickering glow of a candle.
It was a metaphor for the spark of life or the subject's soul.
Exactly. Mm. But when you examine the catchlight in Ojo, that brilliant white dot isn't natural light.
What is it then?
It is almost certainly the reflection of an LED ring light.
Oh, wow. The kind used in commercial digital photography and like social media content creation.
Yep. Used exclusively for that.
So the artist is literally painting the mechanical equipment that captured the digital file. It's almost a meta commentary on the image's origin.
It reviews the fundamental mechanical hurdle the artist is facing here. Duke isn't just trying to paint the biological structure of an eye.
Right.
He is attempting to translate cold, sterile, emitted RGB light, literally the photons blasting directly out of a computer monitor into his retinas, and force that digital phenomenon into physical, tangible pigment.
And emitted light and reflected pigment operate on completely different physics.
Totally different. Emitted light is luminous and infinite. Pigment is heavy, it's finite, and it relies entirely on whatever ambient light happens to be in the room.
Which brings us directly to the material constraints, because obviously you can't translate digital light into the physical world without choosing a weapon, so to speak.
Right, the medium.
And Duke chose acrylic paint for this battle, specifically Liquitex acrylics.
Which is a bold choice. The choice of Liquitex acrylic introduces a massive set of limitations that fundamentally alter the painting.
How so?
Well, to understand why, we have to look at the chemistry of the paint compared to what portrait artists have used for centuries.
Which is usually oil, right?
Exactly. Traditional portraits are almost always painted in oils, and linseed oil dries through a slow process of oxidation.
Right. It doesn't just evaporate.
No. It can take weeks, months, or even years to fully cure.
Wow.
Yeah. And this allows an artist to build up dozens of microscopic translucent layers of pigment, which are called glazes.
Oh, I've heard of that. That slow curing process is why the skin in old master paintings at museums looks like it has, you know, blood pumping underneath it.
Precisely. The light is actually traveling through those layers of oil, hitting the canvas underneath, and bouncing back to your eye.
It refracts through the pigment the exact same way light travels through the translucent layers of living human flesh.
Right. It is a perfect mechanical mimicry of biological tissue.
But acrylic paint, like Liquitex, is a completely different chemical beast.
A totally different beast. It is essentially a pigment suspended in a plastic polymer emulsion. Yeah. Instead of slowly oxidizing, it dries through the rapid evaporation of water. It can dry in a matter of minutes.
Which gives you no time to work those subtle glazes.
Exactly. And crucially, once that water evaporates, the polymer chains bind together into a solid, flat, opaque sheet of plastic.
So the light hits the surface and just stops dead. It does not penetrate.
It stops completely.
And the human brain is a devastatingly harsh critic when it comes to analyzing that surface.
We are so good at spotting fakes.
We have an entire region of the brain called the fusiform face area, and its primary job is to process facial cues.
Right.
It doesn't look at a face part by part. It processes the entire thing holistically in milliseconds.
Yes.
So when your brain scans the painting of Ojo and sees these peach, ochre, and violet tones surrounding the eye, it is subconsciously anticipating the subtle, translucent light scattering of real flesh.
Because that's what those colors signify to us.
Exactly. But instead, it hits a flat, plastic-like wall. The texture is just wrong. The light doesn't penetrate.
And the moment the fusiform face area registers that discrepancy, the suspension of disbelief completely shatters.
It's gone.
The brain alerts you that you are looking at dried plastic polymer on a woven canvas, not a living biological entity. The illusion of life is instantly broken.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. The physical chemistry of the Liquitex acrylic is actively fighting against the emotional weight Gyro Duke is trying to achieve.
Yes. It's a war on the canvas.
He wants to create this monumental portal to the human consciousness, but the plastic polymer is inherently flat. It resists that depth.
It is practically screaming at the viewer, I am a two-dimensional surface.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because of these severe material constraints, the painting develops this really deep stylistic fracture.
It really does.
Yeah.
It is as if two different philosophies of painting are warring on the exact same canvas.
There is a sharp division between how the center of the eye is handled versus the outer edges of the skin.
Yes.
What's totally jarring to me is how the center of the eye pulls you in. Like, you look at the iris, and it is an exercise in absolute hyperclinical perfection. It doesn't look like plastic at all.
No, it doesn't. The central iris is where Duke achieves total technical mastery over the acrylic.
It's stunning.
He utilizes these incredibly complex gray-green tones. He applies millimeter-precise white flashes to simulate moisture.
Right.
The radial outward strokes perfectly mimic the intricate fibrous muscular structure of the human eye.
He renders it with such breathtaking clarity that the iris actually acts as a spherical mirror.
Exactly. It suggests a vast three-dimensional world existing just outside the frame, perfectly reflected on the wet curvature of the cornea.
But then, and this is the fracture, you pull your focus back slightly. You look at the periphery of the canvas.
Yes, the edges.
You look at the eyelashes, the heavy, dark frame of the eyebrow, and the skin radiating outward. They aren't painted with anything resembling that medical precision.
Not at all.
The edges are rendered with kinetic, raw, heavily rhythmic brush strokes. The paint looks thicker, more chaotic. It is almost crude compared to the microscopic perfection of the pupil.
It is a radical departure. The edges abandon the photorealism entirely and become purely gestural.
Why do you think that is?
Well, the artist's hand becomes highly visible there, whereas in the center, the artist's hand is completely hidden to maintain the illusion of the digital photograph.
It actually reminds me of a very modern visual phenomenon.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
Think about what happens when you use portrait mode on a smartphone camera.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Right. You frame your subject, and the software kicks in to simulate a professional camera lens. The person in the center of the frame is razor sharp, perfectly in focus.
But then the algorithm applies that mathematical, artificial blur, the bokeh effect, to the background.
Exactly. And very often the software gets confused. It aggressively blurs the edges of the person's hair or the rim of their glasses.
It cuts off part of an ear sometimes.
Yeah. And when you look at that photo, your brain instantly detects the artificial assembly. It registers as a cut and paste fake because the transition between the sharp center and the blurred edge isn't optically natural.
It creates a cognitive glitch.
Exactly. I would argue that the juxtaposition in Ojo, this flawless, mirrored iris surrounded by loose, flat, gestural skin, creates a very similar cognitive rejection.
The fusiform face area again.
Yeah. Your brain sees these two distinct techniques crashing into each other on the same surface, and it disconnects. Is this a brilliant, intentional, stylistic dialogue about focus, or is it simply a case of two techniques failing to integrate on the canvas?
Well, what's fascinating here is that we don't have to rely purely on art criticism to guess at the artist's intentions.
We don't.
No, we actually have Gyro Duke's own studio notes from August 2019, written while he was physically wrestling with this piece in Whittier.
Oh, wow.
And his self-critique is remarkably unguarded.
It is so rare for an artist to leave a public record of their own frustration with a piece. Usually the goal is to present the final work as a stroke of divine inspiration, you know, totally untouched by human error.
Right, the genius myth. But Duke takes the opposite approach. In his notes, he explicitly writes that the fleshy areas of the painting need serious refinement.
He knew it wasn't working.
He did. He documents the urgent necessity of achieving a more organic gradation in the skin tones to overcome the inherent flatness of the acrylic polymer.
So he was actively fighting the material.
Yes. He openly acknowledges the unresolved friction between the hyperrealism of the iris and the loose gestural strokes of the surrounding skin.
He knows, literally as he is painting it, that the integration isn't fully successful.
He recognizes the very clash of styles we just discussed.
Which raises the psychological question of why he didn't just keep painting. I mean, if he recognized the flaw in August and the painting wasn't finished until December, why leave the edges crude?
It's a great question.
Why not apply more layers to try and force the acrylic to mimic the organic gradation he knew it lacked?
Well, that decision points to the immense psychological toll of the medium. At a certain point, overworking acrylic only emphasizes its plastic nature.
Oh, so more paint makes it worse.
Exactly. Adding more flat layers wouldn't create the translucent depth of oil paint. It would just create a thicker, deadened mask of plastic.
I see.
Duke likely realized that trying to clinically perfect the skin to match the iris would actually destroy the raw energy of the piece.
This raises a really critical question about how we value art. Does knowing about these technical imperfections and like reading the artist's acknowledged frustration with his own materials actually enrich a painting for you?
For me, absolutely.
Does witnessing the artist's struggle make the physical object more valuable than a flawless illusion?
I believe it fundamentally changes the paradigm of the viewing experience.
How so?
Think about it. If Duke had perfectly executed the photorealism across the entire 11 by 11 inch canvas, creating an immaculate imitation of human skin, the painting would be technically impressive, sure.
But emotionally hollow?
Exactly. It would just be a clinical, manufactured image, a really meticulous copy of a digital photograph.
But by seeing where the acrylic fought back, you are forced to engage with the reality of the medium. You see where the flesh stayed aggressively flat, where the brush strokes got desperate, kinetic, and raw around the eyebrows.
Yes.
You aren't just looking at an eye anymore. You are viewing an authentic, grueling human process. You are seeing the labor and the limitations of the hands behind the canvas.
And exactly that labor brings us back to the core tension we established at the beginning.
Right.
If this piece is filled with self-admitted material struggles and flat acrylic skin that actively breaks the psychological illusion of life, How does it still manage to corner you emotionally?
Oh, because it really does. Anyone standing in front of Ojo will tell you it possesses an intense, undeniable psychological weight.
Without a doubt.
So what does this all mean? How do we synthesize the failure of the material with the success of the emotional impact?
The big question.
I think the answer lies in the grand paradox of what Duke is attempting. He is taking the most ancient, rudimentary medium human beings possess, literally taking colored earth and binder and smearing it onto a woven cloth.
Right. It's prehistoric technology, basically.
Yeah. And he's using that primitive technology to rescue a tiny fragment of humanity from an endless churning ocean of consumable digital media.
He is attempting the impossible task of translating the ephemeral into the eternal.
That's a great way to put it.
He takes a digital file, an arrangement of pixels that you would normally scroll past on your phone in a fraction of a second without a second thought.
Just swipe it away.
Exactly. And he drags it into the physical realm. He gives that fleeting image mass, volume, texture, and permanence.
He turns a momentary digital flash into a tangible object that occupies physical space in a room and demands your attention.
By doing that, he strips away your digital dominance.
Oh, I like that phrase, digital dominance.
Well, think about it. When you scroll past an image online, you are entirely in control. You dictate the pace. You dismiss a human face with a micro movement of your thumb.
Just flicking it into the void.
But when Duke isolates that single eye, scales it up to massive, unnatural proportions, and anchors it to the wall with thick, physical acrylic paint, he removes your ability to just consume and discard it.
He forces you to stop.
He forces you to look at something that is aggressively looking back at you, holding you accountable in physical space.
And the crude gestural skin and the flat, stubborn nature of the plastic paint aren't technical errors that ruin the piece.
Not at all.
They are the physical scars of the translation process. They are the visible, tactile evidence of an artist bleeding their energy onto a canvas to pull a digital ghost back into the real tactile world.
Yes, the monumental framing of that 11-inch square elevates what could have been a dry anatomical study into an immense metaphor.
A lasting statement about observation, about modern vigilance, and about the sheer force of human consciousness desperately trying to break through the cold, flat matter of both the screen and the canvas.
It is a powerful reminder that observing art is never a passive, neutral activity.
Never.
When you stand before Ojo, you aren't just looking at a pretty picture. It is a dense, complicated dialogue full of physical friction and digital interference.
You are standing there locked in this uncomfortable, intense gaze with a giant eye, and you are bearing witness to the literal residue of an artist going to war with their own medium.
Which leaves us with a final thought to consider about the future of this kind of visual friction.
Okay, let's hear it.
We've spent this entire deep dive exploring how Jaya Duke's physical struggle with acrylic paint, his inability to make it perfectly mimic reality, the crude brush strokes, the flat plastic texture, is exactly what gives Ojo its authentic human soul.
The flaws are the fingerprints of humanity.
Right, the struggle is what creates the empathy. But look at the trajectory of artificial intelligence in art today. We are rapidly approaching a point where generative AI won't just produce flawless, hyper-realistic images. Algorithms are being trained to intentionally replicate the the very mistakes we just celebrated.
That is wild.
AI will soon be able to artificially generate the look of desperate kinetic brushstrokes. It will simulate the flat texture of acrylic polymer and program in deliberate stylistic clashes just to trick our fusiform face area into feeling empathy.
That is a chilling prospect. Manufacturing the scars of human struggle.
The next time you find yourself moved by an image, I want you to ask yourself, are you connecting with the genuine, agonizing physical labor of a human being wrestling with their medium?
Or are you simply being emotionally manipulated by an algorithm that has learned exactly how to simulate human vulnerability?
Exactly. If the struggle is what gives art its meaning, what happens to our empathy when that struggle can be perfectly synthetically forged?
That is a heavy question to carry with you. The line between authentic physical labor and algorithmic mimicry is only going to get blurrier.
Without a doubt.
The next time you are scrolling through a sea of faces, remember the feeling of holding a real uncomfortable gaze. Remember Jairo Duque wrestling with fast-drying plastic paint in a messy California studio, leaving the scars of his process on the canvas just to make you feel the weight of someone looking back at you. Keep questioning the media you consume, pay attention to the friction, and never underestimate the power of looking closely. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.